Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
What's going on, all you Brooklyn Buddhists? This is Woody Mass, producer of the Jimmy Dallon Valley Brooklyn Buddha Podcast. Forgive the hoarse voice today, folks, getting over a little cold. Jimmy back in town from the Carnival Cruises, shooting a movie, show business. He's back in town, and he's going to be in town for a while. We're going to film, record some more episodes. This episode was a great episode. It was Sandy Stozer, a fellow podcast host and comedian out here in the Los Angeles area. Really great conversation, lasted for a while, a lot of laughs in this one, and stay tuned, JimmyDellValley.com for all the updates, folks, and enjoy the episode, have a great day.
Brooklyn Buddha.
So, me being a veteran, Tim, a veteran, it's great to have a veteran comedian on, a guy who's been around many, many years, and some of us quit the business. And you kind of get frustrated. You come back into stand-up, and then the bug hits you again. You're like, oh, man, I like doing stand-up. But he's also has a really great, I guess you would consider it a radio podcast show. It's called A Comic's Life, and it's really good. And I did the show, and I look forward to doing the show again. Woody, say what's up to my fans.
Howdy.
All right. And Woody, like the fucking... The cartoon.
Man, there is a snake.
That's why he said howdy. Is that what he's fucking? And Tim.
Yeah, Romeo. Well.
And without further ado, the great comedian, Sandy Stozer. Is that how you say it?
Stozer's always said. It's an adopted name, but.
Adopted. Everybody I know from Chicago is adopted.
Really?
Yeah.
A lot of fucking going on in
Chicago.
Because
you're from Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Chicago.
It's something about not being responsible for anything, you know?
Are you born and raised in.
I was born in Chicago. I moved to Northern California in, how old was I? I was about 12 and a half, something like that.
Did you start stand-up there?
No. I actually started that here. I had a few jobs before I did stand-up.
Were you doing improv or anything?
Yeah, I did improv.
In Northern California?
In high school, we actually started a film company that came out of an improv thing, which was it was called Gross Gems Productions.
Oh, okay.
And it was all family stuff, but it was done like the old R Gang comedies where we had like the drop curtain with the underwear in it and all that stuff. And we would do 2.5 minute film shorts up to 12 minutes, and then after the short the curtain would drop and then it would come back up and there'd be a live sketch. Comedy sketch behind it, and when that was over, it'd drop and come up, and they'd play another film.
Right.
I'm still getting calls. I've got calls of people that it's been, I don't know how many generations of high school students at Saratoga High School that want Gross Gems back, you know.
It's hilarious.
It is.
Did any of those guys go on to...
Rick Harper did. Okay. Rick Harper really was the producer. He was the kind of genius behind it, and... Rick Harper is one of those guys that, you know, God has just touched with talent.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that got me to go to California Institute of the Arts. So I turned Juilliard down. I was a musician. I turned Juilliard down, and I went to CalArts because that's where Rick was, and I thought we could continue to do this because I had so much fun doing it. And I get there, and I said, Rick, I'm finally here. He goes, oh, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. The school's not for me. And
wow.
So I went into the music school there. I stayed like 2.5 years and left. It just wasn't. But yeah, I mean, we did lots of stuff. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
That's a great. A lot of comics don't realize how good improv sketch, because you're obviously with sketch, you're not only acting, you're writing, you're being funny, timing is such a great. You know, learning things.
But improv doesn't really mean sketch comedy, yes. Improv is sketch. Improv, you know.
No, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, with sketch, when you're writing, and
yeah,
you know, improv is the other side of it, where learn on your feet and
right.
in the moment and working off other people.
I did that at the Improv, and there was one like magical night at the Improv, where it was myself, Andy Kaufman, Tommy Smothers, Paul Rodriguez was working the bar. He would go around and do the bar because Bud would let him. He would let him do drinks so he could get time later on stage.
So he was a bartender?
Yeah, but Paul Rodriguez? Not. Yeah, but he wasn't really the bartender. He would just help,
like the bar back.
Kind of. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And who else? Steve Bluestein.
Sure.
Ed Bluestone, who was out from New York at the time. That's where he lived. He lived there, and. Gosh, there were just a ton of people who, amazing. You know, did some great things. And Bud Friedman had double booked. He double booked the Improv. It was some Irish one-man show, Irish poet or something. And there was literally maybe two or three people in there. And he had all these comics on the regular night in the bar waiting to go on, and that wasn't going to happen. So you can imagine... 30 drunk comics. Ben Powers was also there. A lot of people don't even remember him. Do you remember Ben Powers?
Yeah, I remember. Was Joe Restivo there?
I don't remember that. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
Joe Restivo,
the guy with the bullhorn? Who was the guy with the bullhorn?
That was Glenn Super. He died.
That's right. He did die?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I used to love watching
Mr. Bullhorn.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
People from France.
Yeah.
Some deodorant would be nice. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Right in the middle of his act, you just pick the thing up and just do something totally incongruent.
Yeah, my old manager, my first manager used to manage him.
Yeah, we actually left there. We were really drunk. It never happened. It was Ben Powers, myself, and Robin, and we went to an all-night Hughes Market that was almost directly across the street. It was We all walked because we were too drunk. And Robin started tapping on the glass of this three tiers of rotating roasting chickens. And he's tapping on the glass. It's like 2 a.m. And you'd be surprised how many people are in an all-night market in Hollywood at 2:00 a.m.
Right.
And this little old lady, what she was doing up, I have no idea, came by and tugged on his shirt. And Robin had us all three doing this, and we finally, Ben and I, we didn't know what he was doing. We maybe 5 minutes of this, and he and I just pulled back, and Robin, what are you doing? He was quiet. And he just keeps tapping, and this woman says, excuse me, what are you doing? And he pulled that Paul Lynn thing that he used to do.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I'm so glad you asked. That's mine. First row, third from the left, 6 pounds, 4 ounces. Isn't she adorable? Hello, Melissa. And we fell out. I mean, because I had no idea he was going there with this. But he was like that all the time.
Now, if my audience doesn't know, he's talking about Robin Williams, guys.
I thought I said Robin Williams right in the beginning of this, but
Andy Kaufman.
No, Andy Kaufman.
Robin Williams, Andy Kaufman. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. No, I'm just making sure. I just want to let them know that it's such a great story.
We can tell right off the bat.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's not Robin Harris.
No. Oh, I wished it was, but he died way too young. What a funny man.
You know, it's funny. I worked with his nephew, and I thought he was such a great comedian, Ricky Harris.
Oh, really?
He was such a great... Because he was in the movie, The Heat, back with De Niro and Pacino.
Right.
And he had that great part. He was like the guy in the junkyard, and they came there to, you know... I was like, man, this guy's fucking great. And then I worked with him at Caroline's, and, you know, he was getting a little bit of heat from his movies and stuff. And all of a sudden, he just kind of disappeared. He wasn't doing it or whatever the thing was.
Yeah.
And it was, but he had that Robin Harris. He was a great stand-up. But Robin Harris, one of, and you guys know, right, Bebe's Kids, you know? That was the thing, you know what I mean? You know, and it's so funny because it's like, every once in a while,
turn into a cartoon series?
Yeah.
Just from a bit.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because every, he goes, I wear my ring on the wrong finger because I married the wrong goddamn woman. You know, like, and it was such a great joke. Oh, that joke is so good. And then he was in Do the Right Thing. He played, he was like the homeless guy, the three black guys that lived under the bubble. And he was in Do the Right Thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought he died by then.
Yeah, no. I'm like...
So what was the other one he did with... I don't know, it was Eddie Murphy and Harlem Nights. So Harlem Nights was first then, huh?
Oh, I think so.
It had to be. Yeah. Because I thought Do the Right Thing definitely came out after that, but I thought he passed away by that time.
Oh yeah, no, he was legendary. I remember like as a young comic coming to LA and I don't know if he owned that club, Comedy Act Theater. Was that his club?
I don't think so.
So that maybe that was just his place. It was
yeah, Comedy that was Act like Theater, his home club.
LA Comedy Cabaret.
LA Cabaret was my home club.
Okay, so that wasn't.
No, it was not.
So
Robin Harris.
Comedy Act Theater, right?
That was Howie Mandel's home club too.
Okay, yeah. You know, that's a funny story. I was telling my good friend is Vic Cohen.
Okay.
Who is if you know him, he's like
they don't know.
Howie Mandel does not need writers, but he's like his head guy that Howie confides in everything, mm-hmm. and they're both bald. And every prank show, he's part of bald. The thing. You know what I mean? He's like on David Spade. Anyways, you know, I was so mad at Howie Mandel for so many years, and then when me and Vic became buddies, he explained to me. Because this is before anybody knew about the germaphobe shit.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like, this guy fucking didn't talk to
me. Yeah, growing up where you grow up or where I grow up,
yeah,
you don't do that to people. Like, it's like, how disrespectful.
Don't talk to me, you cocksucker. You don't shake my hand, cut your fucking hand off. Like, you're so mad, you know? And then he's like, no, I guess he doesn't, you know. So anyways, so you, Chicago to North Cal, and you, Rick Overton's my good friend.
Really?
Yeah.
He's one of the nicest people on the planet.
You know, it's, I actually met Rick through Patrice O'Neill, introduced me to him. Patrice O'Neill, one of my all-time favorite comics.
I've never met him.
And a friend, you know, we've seen his
act. I know who he is. So, I listen to him all the time, I've never met him.
We're doing a show at Boston Comedy Club, Tim. I think Tim's in the show. I can't remember. And the place is so packed. And the way you can only go to the bathroom is you had to walk in front of the stage. It was like the worst. It was fucking worse. You had to walk past. And Patrice is just killing on stage. And Rick Overton, excuse me, he's trying to get past to go to the bathroom. And Patrice is like, what the fuck? Oh, my God, Rick Overton. I mean, it was like Patrice was a little boy.
Yeah.
Like, it was so sweet to see that part of Patrice to go, ladies and gentlemen, that's Rick Overton. He's one of the best. Like, it was like, wow, Patrice, you fucking like Rick Overton? Like, I couldn't. And then that's how I met Rick, and then we became buddies, and then Tim worked with him in Texas, and they became close, and then you never saw him again, really, until...
Well, I would see him, like, he'd pop into New York City, and I'd go hang out with him.
What a funny story. One of the most genuine guys.
So I was married, or I was dating a girl, and I kept telling him, oh, Rick, I work with Rick, called me.
Pick one. Were you married, or were you dating?
Yeah,
both.
Okay, all right.
And I've been in touch with Rick, but I hadn't seen him in a while. And I kept saying, oh, you got to meet. He's the nicest guy. He's a great guy. So he goes, I'm going to be doing a show. And, you know, a little show, and then we'll hang out. So we go to the show, and I introduce him to, to my ex-wife, whatever. And he goes, oh, nice to meet you. I got to go. And I'm like, dude, we just came all the way in the city. Watched the whole show. He goes, oh, this girl's, you know, the girl had come to, you know, go back to her.
You were looking to make points, bro.
Yeah.
That's what you were doing.
Yeah, yes. He always want, you know, he's always about, you know, he's a great guy. But if he had a chance of getting some pussy, he was gone.
Yeah,
you know, so Rick is, I'm sorry, Jim.
And that's the story. When I first met him, he did that too. I helped him hook up with a girl that he liked. Boom. And then she kind of...
Are you a good wingman?
I was at the time. And then she... fuck it. He leans in to kiss her. Because, you know, she was kind of feeling him.
Wait a minute. He leans in to kiss your date? What's the deal here?
No, this is the previous story.
Okay. All right.
I gotta explain. So, he just left.
Okay.
He
went with the girl. Makes us have ADD.
No, I know.
It's like,
that story was, I'm so excited to talk to him, and he just takes off. Sorry, I gotta go. And I'm like, well, we just came. So that when I originally met him, I'm trying to hook him up with a girl that he liked, and he goes, they're in his room, he goes to kiss her, and they've been talking for the whole week, because we were working the week. So he finally leans in to kiss her, and she pauses. Like, she doesn't lean back, or does she? And she goes, you're older than my father.
Oh,
yeah.
And he goes, all right. You know, like, no problem. Like, and then afterwards,
what a waste of time.
Because it was a girl I was kind of, we both kind of But I was there 2 weeks, so I'm there the second week. So I kind of fool around with her. I get her back to the condo. I got the condo myself. And now I'm fooling around with her. I'm on the bed with her. I'm on top.
Yeah.
And I'm about to, and she goes, "I was raped a month ago." Right, oh, as I'm dude. About, so and then
that's
I'm like,
"That's not even
I,
funny."
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's,
yeah. Right. Man. So I go, "Look, I you know I pull," and then I tell.
Well, then you have to blow me.
Yeah.
He's so sensitive, Jimmy. Yeah,
so I tell Rick, I said, "Remember that girl that you know that kind of rejected you?" And and I said, "Well, she told me this," and he goes, "Good." He goes, "Good." She embarrassed me. You know, she did this. He goes, "I feel bad, but you know, she kind of whatever."
So I asked you during the break. We had a commercial interruption brought by Marvin, my cat, and the maintenance man. Anyways, so you don't know Durst, Will Durst, who's my buddy, Tim's buddy.
I don't.
But you know who he is.
Absolutely. You know? Anybody that spent any time in Northern California knows Will Durst.
Just a great guy. Great guy. And is Slayton from out there, too?
Who, Bobby Slayton?
Yeah, that's where he really got his chops out there in San Fran.
I'm not 100% sure. I'm just not going to answer that because I don't know.
But
I really don't know.
Pretty sure. Well, anyways.
Because I remember the old pictures with Robin and Mark Wiener.
Very possible.
Yeah, he was funny. Remember the
Mark Wiener, you know, knew who he was? He mm-hmm. was a prop act. He would do all these Wienerets, crazy, the Wienerets and all this stuff. Yeah. Anyways, it doesn't matter.
Funny.
All right, so
we're going down memory lane
yeah, so
here.
So you did this, so you did your improv as a little kid, as a teenager, right? So yeah. Then you came here
right.
after Northern California, and you went, what, to the improv, to an open mic, to do stand-up?
Yeah, it took a long time. No, I got a job as a host for a live promotional company that did live promos for automobile dealers.
Okay.
And that took a while. You know, I mean, I needed some...
You were getting good money
at
that time?
It wasn't that great, but I wasn't making any. And, you know, my wife was working for the city, and, you know, I felt kind of like a piece of shit. You know, I needed to bring home some bacon. And up in Northern California, after we first got married, we moved to Northern California and worked at Santa Clara Valley Medical Center. I was a video tech for the hospital. Okay. And then when we moved back down to Southern California, I didn't have a job, and I had to look for a job. So while in Northern California, I ran into a guy that had hired me for a summer job selling cars down here while I was waiting to find out if I made the actor-director program. When I went to California Institute of the Arts, they were doing a new program under...
Right.
Sandy McHendrick, which was the film school guy. He's the guy who was the director for, was it Slim Pickens? Riding the bomb down, the A-bomb.
Oh, yeah.
What am I thinking? Uh-huh. Dr. Strangelove.
Uh-huh.
He was the director for that. And they switched up all the rules. They fired the guy that brought me in. There was only 4 students that were picked.
Oh, wow.
And so I was really lucky to get in there. And I think it's just because I was just well... rounded. There were different things, you know, you have a little talent for different things, and it's exactly what they were looking for, and I really wanted to get in. And they moved it from one school to the film school, so now you had to qualify by having films. Now I wrote and I helped, you know, direct, and I definitely acted in all those Gross Gems films.
Uh-huh.
And those were being played on television, on late night TV, like, you know, Creature Features and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
They, you know, throw them on and stuff. But in high school, we had sent 6 films to the 17th annual Eastman Kodak Film Festival, and we got 5 awards. One of which they didn't have. One of which they didn't have a category for, which was live animation at that time. So we were using a 16mm camera. Rick Harper would shoot one frame, and then I'd move an inch.
Oh, my God.
And then he'd shoot another frame. And that was the one that was a 2.5-minute movie, but no one had ever seen it before. And it was so funny, as all these experts, these film experts and everything, they said, "Well, you can't do that on a 16mm camera." And Rick held it up and said, "Oh, this is what we did it on."
Yeah.
You know, because he didn't know he couldn't do it. It was just, you know how when everything works, everything's going right? You know, you just move the camera back, I can move a little bit more. And it even had me going over a dirt jump. I would go over a dirt jump. So it looks like I'm on a motorcycle, but I'm not on a motorcycle. It was called Scramble. It was a lot of fun. Cool. But that got me to...
So it was like a bootleg green screen back in the day, right? It's like Rick Harper created green screen. Nobody knows that except for Sandy Sucks.
But he was one of the guys who was instrumental in creating Space Mountain. And this guy didn't have college. He's just that smart.
Wow.
Yeah. And
fucking Space Mountain.
I was the first human being on Space Mountain.
That's insane.
It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they were all done with the sandbags, and they thought everything's fine. I said, "All right, who wants to get on this?" And
like, who's the dummy that wants to try this? I said, "I'll go. I'm a little drunk.
I'll go." And I jumped on it, and it was really fit. Of course, you have to remember, there's no effects in it. It's a skeleton.
Right.
So you're riding this thing, and it was really fast.
It was fucking scary.
It was really scary.
It's dark. Was it dark back then?
I mean, they obviously had it lit up, but there was nobody in Disneyland. It was a Clint Eastwood movie. There's just, you know, like, know, tumbleweeds blowing around. And I'd never been to Disneyland where there wasn't anybody there.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that was fun. No one would know that, the claim to fame being the first one. But they had to turn it down because it was really, really fast. I'm hanging on. I was in great shape then, too. Never know by looking at me now.
Right. That's true. You know, like me, I was never this fat. I mean, it was the fattest ever. My wife, you know, I always show my pictures when I was skinny. She's like, all right, everybody was skinny once. You know, like that's her whole thing.
I wish my wife would have that.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't you like a salad?
Yeah.
You know.
So you're married?
Been married for 41 years.
41 years. Yeah. Wow, that's awesome.
If you say so.
Yeah?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she's your best friend?
She's a good friend of mine.
That is hilarious.
She's become very close. That is
she's seen
funny.
Me poop.
Does she hold your hand to poop? My wife used to, not no more.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
What would be the reason to hold your hand while you poop?
I enjoy pooping, and I
you wanted to share that with her.
Yeah.
Just squeeze the cheeks a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I was watching Donnie Wahlberg the other day. He's got his show. He married Jenny McCarthy.
Right.
And he was talking about holding hands while pooping. And I'm like, look, I'm not the only one
did that? Oh, yeah. My God. No, I'm like a little kid, you know, when they're potty training. They go hide to poop.
Yeah.
You know, they go hide under something. I kind of want to be in a cave.
Over his head.
I want to be in a cave.
Yeah, my ex used to, the funny, she'd leave the door open. You know, like, come
on. I don't
want to
see that.
And then she'd be on the phone talking, so she'd get up and wouldn't flush because she didn't want them to know she was on the toilet. But then she'd forget, and I'd walk in like, what the? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not. Men and women should have separate bathrooms. I don't want to know separate.
I have my bathroom. You saw mine. The monkey room. You saw the monkey room?
Oh, is that you right here across
the
hall?
Yeah, you saw the monkey room. Yeah. It's all monkeys. That's my room. That's a man's fucking bathroom. It's a little boy's bathroom, but
man's
that's
the way bathroom
that's
cave.
Why I decorated it. Yeah. All monkeys. It has monkeys. If you see, I have...
So you're into monkeys.
Yeah. I have the monkey three-card Monty, but with monkeys, like shell game.
Wow.
You can see them. They have three fez hats. There's a monkey on them.
You should have the monkey's music playing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Sounds of the Amazon.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because my...
Is that on your phone?
I wish.
Is that the alarm on your phone? Sounds of the Amazon? Yeah.
So you're married 41 years.
Yeah.
And it's... Did you ever break up in the beginning?
No. Uh-uh.
So...
No.
So... Yeah, this is right out of not high school, but
no. I met her when I was going to first year when I went to Cal Arts. They had a she was at CSUN, which is now CSUN.
My wife just got her master's from there.
Yeah, oh, really? Yeah. My wife was going to CSUN, and they hadn't finished the dorms yet at the at Cal Arts, so that was probably be like a semester before the dorms would be absolutely finished. They didn't want to wait another year to bring in students. So they had to find a place to put students that had opted to have dorms. CSUN had an entire floor empty. And they put all the people in those dorms, which was really odd because CSUN's policy was there's a boys' dorm and a girls' dorm. And ours was, Cal Arts was wild, man. And that was boys and girls on the same floor. You could have a girl roommate if you wanted. You could do anything.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Girl roommate.
I had one for a year. Eventually, but that was the next year. Yeah. Not actually the first year. Yeah. And I was horrible when I did. I was so drunk, I didn't know.
Right.
It was terrible. Right. It was the worst lay on the planet. But, yeah, and back then, you know, you didn't worry about a bunch of stuff, you know, crabs and shit like that. But, and it, there was a lot of people that had them. The women at CalArts were just beat up. They were not really pretty. And the ones that were like dancers. And, I don't know. It was my first experience ever meeting a gay person, too. I'd never met any gay people before.
And he lived in Northern Cal.
Yeah, but, you know, I didn't live in the city, you know. I lived south of the city. I lived closer to San Jose. It was a town called Saratoga.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of old money, you know. My dad worked for Underwriters Laboratories. He was a West Coast office manager for that, real straight guy, you know. Just the facts, man, just the facts, you know. And I don't know, man. It was a different time. I mean, when I went to school, my parents brought me to school down there. You know, the first day where they drop you off and say goodbye. They were having a special day. It was called Gender Fuck Day. My dad's from Wisconsin, and my mom was from, Evanston, Illinois. And they were like, they didn't even say the word. But here it is in print, you know, Gender Fuck Day. And they had a gay, the only kissing booth they had was a gay kissing booth. And, I mean, everything happened so fast that the vice president of the school was there, and he used to play football for, like, Oklahoma or something, and he was definitely homophobic. And one of the gay guys was, I said, he thought was being a little too aggressive. It was a kissing booth, so he went over to talk to him, and he said, I have a secret. And he said, what? And he said, you know, come here. And he grabbed the vice president behind the back of his head and laid a kiss right on his mouth with bright red lipstick. Kissed him right on the mouth.
God.
And this guy, he didn't think. He reared back. He reacted. And he knocked him cold. And this is a big dude. He's like 6'4".
Wow.
260. And just cracked this guy. Knocked him out. He fell down a flight of stairs. And ended up suing the school for, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars back then. And won. I mean, it wasn't even contested. And the vice president was fired, and the kid got rich, and this all happened day one. So you can imagine.
It's day one. Your parents are there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think this is going to be a great school.
And you said you turned Juilliard down for this?
I know you turned Juilliard. That's what I want to talk to you about.
You need to kiss the president now.
You got into Juilliard. Did you have to audition to get into Juilliard?
Yeah, I'm going
to
be real straight with you. I did not audition, and I did not even apply. I had a music teacher up in Northern California that applied for me, who had a phenomenal record, and they would do anything he said. And
so, what was
they
your?
They just said yes.
Your instrument?
Trumpet. So you were a trumpet. Yeah, I had a very unique situation. You're being from New York. I was from Chicago. There's people that run those towns that are not elected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are you with me?
Fucking alderman, those shady, yeah.
I'm talking about family.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And interestingly enough, Chicago was being run by Sam Giancana.
Back then, sure.
Yeah, he was part of the Gambino family.
Uh-huh.
So he had a thing where he was into everything, meaning if you rented an instrument, he got a piece of that. If you had to wear a uniform, he was into all the public schools.
Wow.
I could not play in my elementary school band because I also didn't take private trumpet lessons from the public band teacher. So, which was really interesting. So there was only one option. My folks had to find me a teacher.
Wow.
Well, there was a teacher that was first chair of the Chicago Symphony that would take one, beginning student. That was it, just one. And I happened to get in with him, and I happened to have a talent for it. But I moved along, so I never knew how good I was because the only person I could compare myself with was one of the best in the world. I was the only, he's the only person I ever played with. I never played with a kid. I never played with a band. And I studied with him for 7 years. So when I came out to California, I was petrified because I had to, you know, try out for the school, you know, orchestra, whatever, and I thought I was terrible. And I was, at that time, I was doing junior and senior in college music. I mean, it was, you know, you guys, if you're not into music, you won't understand. But it's all starting with, like, classical stuff, like The Planets, you know, Gustav Holst. It's just out there and weird. But I was kicking ass with it and didn't even know it. So the first pro job I had, I was 12 and a half, and I played at the San Jose Civic Auditorium as a guest soloist with the San Jose Philharmonic, San Jose Symphony, for a big guy called Jose Greco, who used to be on Ed Sullivan all the time. He's the guy with a straight brim hat and the little balls on those straight brim hat, and castanets and all that stuff. Way back in the day, dude. And so, I mean, he was old when I was young, you know, but all the parents knew him and everything. And that's who I played at. And I played for Cinco de Mayo, which I didn't even, I'd never met a Mexican. I didn't know what was going on this big day of Cinco de Mayo. And I think I played like the Lonely Bowl or something like that by, who was that? Who owns A&M Records? Who was it?
A&R, Mark?
No, A&M. Mark? They used to, Herb Alpert.
Yeah.
Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. There wasn't one Mexican in that band. They're all Spanish Jews, every one of them. But yeah, anyway, so yeah, that's kind of where everything started with all the music and stuff like that. And I just loved to perform. I didn't really get into stand-up till I came to Southern California, moved here, and started working with, like I said, doing improv because I was doing sketch. Mm-hmm. So I started to do improv. And started seeing all these guys, and then I got a partner, a guy by the name of Mark Price, and we would do
not Skippy.
No, yeah. No, we would do improv, or we would do stand up at the store usually, but it was partners were out, so that kind of fell away. I got the job with the advertising agency, ended up being vice president of the advertising agency, and then I was done. I was like 12 years, 13 years into this. I made great money, but I was like, I can't do this anymore. Uh-huh. But everywhere I went, I was constantly funny. So my friends just kept saying, dude, you need to do this for real. So I did what a lot of guys did, you know, Midwestern background, trying to do it straight and all that. I went to a comedy class, uh-huh, trying to learn how to do it that way.
Who was your teacher?
It was a woman. Judy Carter.
Oh my God,
Judy Carter.
This is one year.
This is like 1980.
Jesus, she's been teaching that long.
88, 89.
That's when she first wrote.
There was a book. Yeah,
yeah, that was her first. Yeah.
Yeah, but she taught the class. She didn't have all these other. She didn't teach. She has everybody else teach. But if she's still doing it, but she was the teacher, and I think we had probably. I don't know, there's probably 11 people in the class, and I ended up doing my set at Igby's, which was
Jan Smith.
That's correct, yes.
Ice House, yeah.
Yeah, look at you, man. You do know your stuff. Yeah. I wish it was still there. It was a great club. And yeah. I performed in front of a guy that was just out from Ohio, who was sitting with Jan, and who am I thinking of? Cincinnati. Who am I thinking of?
WKRP now in Cincinnati?
No, now he hosts...
What are you thinking, Drew Carey?
Drew Carey, yeah. Drew Carey. And so I didn't know who Drew Carey was, and he was sitting there, and I did really well, apparently, because, you know, I didn't bring a lot of support people. My wife came and a couple of friends and stuff, uh-huh, but I think Jan liked me, and he wanted to hire me as an opener, for paid opener, uh-huh, and that never happened, because it just gave me a lot of confidence. Somebody wanted me to do this, so I just started working on this stand-up. Uh-huh. And next thing you know, I'm, you know, middling, and I'm a voracious writer, so I was writing and doing stuff. I was up all the time, and I was working in Encino there. I was the only guy that probably got along with the owner for some reason. I actually treated him like a person. It was funny. I got treated back the same way. He was odd, though. There's no doubt about it. And then I started doing a lot of road work, and then I started headlining, and I did that for like 10 years. The earthquake hit in, what was that, 94 was that?
Yeah, I wasn't here. I
yeah, 94, and I was in, who that was, Doug Stanhope was opening for me out in Texas somewhere, I think it was wow. in Corpus or something. And he's the one that called me in my room and said, "Hey, I'm watching, you know, I'm watching CNN or whatever." No, it wasn't CNN back then. Anyway, it was whatever the big one was back then. C-SPAN.
Yeah.
I was watching C-SPAN. He said, "Hey, they just had an earthquake there. Didn't you say you were from like Van Nuys area or something like that?" I went, "Yeah." And he goes, "They just had an earthquake there." I said, "Okay."
So your wife is here?
We have it all the time. What do you mean
your she's here? Your wife was here at that time.
She was here, and I had two sons, and they were both young. Yeah. So that freaked me out. I'm 1,800 miles away, you know? Yeah, yeah. So I called her within the first 4 minutes, and fortunately, I was unable to talk to her for a week after that. They had all the phones shut down, and she just said, "You know what? I got it handled. Just finish your tour. Come." It was a 6,600-mile tour. Jeez. She said, "Finish that and come home. Everything's fine." Uh-huh. And I did, and then when I got home, you know, that whole time away, it's like, I should be there.
Yeah.
So I took 10 years off, almost 11 years off, to help raise my kids. Mm-hmm. I was an announcer for people. I made a living, you know.
Yeah.
And then about 4 years ago, I met Billy Batts. And he would, you know, I went online to find a place to go. It was a Liquid Zoo. Uh-huh. And I figured I can't get too hurt there. And I was, you would have thought I was walking out to, you know, Madison Square Garden to do some big show. I was petrified. A bunch of drunks and... Mm-hmm. You know, it was just really bad place, dude. And I went in there, and I did okay, but, you know, we're our own worst critic on things. And I'm like, oh, man, I have definitely like lost trumpet. My fastball.
It's like, oh, yeah, I could never pick it up again. Oh, God, I didn't do well, and but you probably...
Right, but yeah. If I did pick the trumpet up now, I could barely make a sound because my embouchure is not right.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing... With comedy, you still know what's funny, but right. you're not sure how to deliver it. And if you show any fear at all,
yeah.
you know, that's doubt. And doubt kills the warrior. And you got to be a warrior to walk out there. You got to know you know.
Did it come back pretty quick, though?
No, I'm still working on it because the business has changed so much. Yeah. And, you know, all these bringer shows, this, that, and the other, and everybody's into contests. I'm not a contest guy. Mm-hmm. Fuck them. You know,
I always
you
said
can't tell me I'm not funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's I always said, and even with Rick Overton and Jimmy knows that I started when I was 16. They go, "You have no life experience. You got to wait till you know you put in 10 years until you're 30." Then I hit 30. I'm gonna be 40.
Yeah,
and they go, "You're too old now." I go, "What?" What happened? When did it change?
But I didn't start till I was like 40.
Yeah, so yeah. it's
you know
like
what I mean. And they said, "This is a young man's game." I said, "Really? Watch this. That's the way I've always been. You tell me I can't do something, and just watch me do it. Maybe it's just the stubbornness.
Yeah, because I'm
Sicilian and Greek.
There was
I'm
the
stubborn.
Booker of Comedy Central, the half-hour specials, and I mentioned there's a guy, John DiResta.
Oh, yeah, I know John.
John DiResta, who was on Comedy Central on a sitcom. And,
yeah, it was,
I said,
it was called DiResta.
Well, that was his sitcom
on
UPN.
No, that was
UPN.
Like on UPN.
Oh, but you're
was,
right.
I forget
yeah.
his show. He
it was the lowest
show.
Lowest yeah. scoring show. In
he did that. And then Rick Overton. I said, Rick would be perfect. He has a HBO special. And they go, "Well, they're out of our demographic. They're a little too old."
Yeah.
And I said, "This is Comedy Central. You know, this is when I grew up."
Yeah.
That was
we
it.
We liked guys who are 40s and experienced. We looked up to those. Now
right.
they're... You know, that's all 21-year-olds, and it's different.
Who think they know.
Yeah.
They're funny, but there isn't any depth. Yeah. Jimmy's got a lot more depth. You know, he can take things places that these younger guys can't do.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're not funny.
Yeah.
Right. Really funny. But, you know, you show me situations in a comedy club, not just an audience. Show me situations that are happening in a comedy club. And my money's on Jimmy every time. Compared to one of these young comics, because they can't handle it. It takes them out of their act.
Yeah.
They get out of their act, you know, and they either say something that just proves you're really young and dumb.
Yeah.
Or you can turn somebody around and bring them your way.
Yeah.
And do it with class and fun, and everybody's with you. Everybody's with you.
And that's like if you look.
Well, that's at, how we try to write Universal. Yeah. I try to write Universal. If it's it fucking works here, it's gonna work in Texas.
That's right.
It's gonna work.
Timelessness.
Or I won't fucking do the joke.
Yeah. And there's a lot of guys if you look that changed as they got older. Obviously, Louis C.K. is like a more modern one, but the prior George Carlin, they all changed as they got older,
right.
And they started to realize their voice.
I had some writer in Texas call me. When he said this comic should be renamed. He called me Howie Rodney Kinison. Howie Rodney Kinison. He said he's one guy, but he's a little like all of these guys. And when I thought, hey, I don't know if he's trying to say I don't know who I am or whatever, but I liked hearing that. I like that you could. Say, yeah, he's got a little of this, got a little of that, he has a little of this. Mm. And, I just, because Howie Mandel was a great stand-up when I was, first starting, and his whole thing about that kind of edgy, how to talk to people and stuff, I took that and I kind of morphed that a little bit. I just pulled everything that was out of me that felt like me.
Right.
Yeah. And I had a little Sam Kinison in me because... Definitely there's times when
because
I
would
get so frustrated
time.
I just go off.
Yeah, that's what I see.
You need
with
stage
a
time at the Comedy Store, so you had a little Sam Kinison. Yeah, whatever you need.
Sam was actually working at the Comedy Store West. He was the security guy at the Comedy Store West.
The one over here.
Westwood.
Right. Westwood, yeah.
Yeah. He's not nice, by the way. He was not a nice guy.
My buddy is Alan Stevens.
Oh, really?
So that was, he was the showrunner of... Roseanne,
right,
and he was his right hand man. I mean,
after the show's over, I'll give you a personal story about something I think you'll like. I definitely don't want to put it on blast.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of the young comics, some of them really funny, but they're the same as the next guy. They're kind of taking who they grew up with, Dane Cook or wherever.
Yeah,
and they're doing their version, and they haven't evolved. That's why I get mad when I see. Only using the and the catering to two young comics too much. I think I see these young comics just this cookie cutter same.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Dane Cook fan.
Yeah,
but I definitely have to give him.
Got
to
respect. Got
to
respect.
He changed comedy.
Oh yeah.
He changed it with.
He has his own form, and it's not for everybody.
I'm talking about how he's worked himself into a huge amount of money using social media. No one ever thought of that before.
Mm-hmm.
And what was he on? MySpace, I think, when he started with that.
Yeah.
And how he built audiences
emails.
Up that didn't really even know him.
I remember him before MySpace.
That was brilliant.
Thing, this how smart he was business-wise, he was big on Napster.
Really?
Napster, because Napster was free, so he got his... I remember... He was plugging his stuff, building a little
following. That's right. That's right.
And a lot of, and then there was a big, so that MySpace was a big bump up for certain comics. And
well, no YouTube, one thought of using it like that before.
Yeah, and then YouTube propelled guys from clubs to theaters. Gaffigan, Jeff Dunham was a huge one. He had that big 100 million.
100 million what?
100 million views on one video.
Right.
That was his Ahmed.
A few years ago, I have to go back like 5 years. He made, in that 1 year, he made $34 million in that year.
You're talking about Dunham?
Jeff Dunham, yeah.
So this weekend...
Larry the Cable Guy made 33.
Me and my wife, so we watched Jeff Dunham's new special. And he goes to I think he goes to France or Iceland. And he goes all over the world. And he does like a different, I think he does a different hour everywhere he goes.
Really?
Right? And he writes jokes specifically, hey, I'm in Iceland, blah, blah, blah. And it's like amazing.
Wow.
To see, holy shit, look at this guy. Is he that good? So then you watch it, because my friend manages him, And then you watch it, and you're like, holy shit. And now he has his own show in Vegas. Now, I was on America's Got Talent when Terry Fader won.
Okay,
so when Terry Fader won, we all knew he was going to win. We sat there like, look at the way
we all knew he was going to win.
Well, no, because the way they were giving him B-roll, the way they would just constantly interview him, he's going to fucking win. They're setting him up to win. They're making the audience want him. Yeah. They're making the people that are watching and voting want him. They're showing him so much, and he's great. He was amazing, So, you know, I had talks with him about Jeff Dunham. I said, you know, Jeff Dunham's fucking amazing, Tara. I go, what? Why isn't he at that level? He goes, he hasn't peaked on the, he goes, he needs that, he goes, having the comedy specials, not enough. He goes, he has to get something. And then all of a sudden, fucking maybe a year later,
Ahmed, probably his divorce.
Ahmed,
yeah,
the dead terrorist came upon.
Yeah, and that up. Just
that was it, right?
I'm kidding you,
right? So now, get this. Let me explain to you how good Jeff Dunham is, because Tim's open for him. You know.
Years, oh, have you?
Yeah, yeah, years ago, right?
Oh, wow.
And he would have to be very clean. So this is how smart Jeff Dunham is.
He's not that clean anymore, though.
No. He never was clean. He never was clean. He just wanted you to be clean.
Oh, I see. Right?
So he goes, he sits there, he creates Ahmed, the dead terrorist, right? He's, I forgot where the fuck he was. Is it Middle East? I don't know where. He's the number one comic in the Middle East because they love that fucking.
Right, like, and he was very afraid to go there.
Right. So he goes on this tour. It's called All Over the Map. So he's there. Maybe it was in, no, it was in Malaysia or something like that, Indonesia, something like that. And they said, look, you can't do that character. You'll be arrested or Ahmed? Whatever it is.
You can't do Ahmed?
Yeah, you cannot do Ahmed, right? So he tells the audience, and they're like, you know, he's kind of not arguing with his tour manager. He's going, look, I got a fucking, that's what people bought tickets. I mean, I'm sold. Huge, I mean, huge theaters he sold out.
Oh, he was selling out stadiums. Right?
So he's sitting there. I mean, it's not even, I don't know, maybe the stadiums, whatever they are. It's just huge. And he's like, I can't. So he goes online, or not online. He sits there, and they show the show. And he's doing Peanut. He's doing all his fucking characters. And he goes, you know, a lot of you guys came to see a character I do. I
can't even say the name.
He goes, I can't. He goes, I was told I can't do him. And, you know, there would be issues and people are kind of. And he told his tour manager, they're going to fucking boo me.
Yeah.
He goes, they're going to boo me. He goes, I got to do him. And he goes, look, you can't do him. Blah, blah, blah. He goes, oh, look, he's not here tonight. I'm sorry. But his cousin.
His cousin?
Is he? Right?
There was another puppet, though, that he did. Yeah,
no, so he pulls him out. And he's got like a little mustache.
Oh, this is before the cousin was created.
He's got a beret.
He looks like a Frenchman.
Yeah, he's like a French
hysterical
terrorist.
Oh, how funny!
But he's Ahmed, right?
It's kind of an oxymoron
so
there.
So now
French terrorist
he's destroying, right? Destroying, and he does questions and answers.
Yeah.
And he said, "Dear Ahmed," he fucked up. The whole lot is whoa. And even Ahmed fucking looking at him like it was brilliant, and he pulled himself out of that. And
wow,
he didn't get in trouble.
It
was insane, but that was the only time because Vanessa, my wife, goes because he's reading it. He fucked up because he wasn't thinking.
Right, you know? That makes perfect sense. Actually, I can seriously see myself.
You guys
got to
see
that.
It's brilliant to watch.
Funny story. Last time I worked with him, right before YouTube hit, so he was working on Ahmed. It wasn't. Right. It was a different. It was the same.
He character. Built his own.
Yeah, he does.
Puppet
so he was.
No one
creating,
was 12.
Creating it, you know, at the time. So it was a different look.
Right.
But the funny thing is, afterwards, you know, I had my T-shirts, CDs, DVDs. And they said, you could sell, but you got to sell at the end of the last table. He had 6 tables, 8-foot tables. I got 1 foot of the 6th table. So I got 1 foot of space to
for
put
what?
My
for your
shirt
merch?
And merch. So people got to walk down 8-foot, 6, 8-foot, 50 feet down the line. And then, this guy, he was on the show. But I would get the left, like they felt bad. You were on the show.
Because they thought there was more Jeff Dunham
right.
at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so they come in, and then you're there.
What is this, a character? Yeah, Jeff, yeah, they're looking at him. Are you a character? Because I'm a person. I was on the
and
show.
A t-shirt.
Yeah, they would sell so much that I think for a while he wasn't even selling because they would bring it to the shows. I know there's other ventriloquists too. There's a guy, Taylor Mason, that he would sell his dolls, like puppets,
mm-hmm.
and people would bring it and, like, interrupt the show, holding, right. you know, like, whenever he brought that, you know, it was kind of like, I mean, it's a good thing, but a bad thing. It's like Jim Brewer, when I worked with Jim Brewer, he was right. doing his Goat Boy, and after every... In between each joke, they would interrupt the show. You'd be doing...
Yeah, fucking like the worst. You're
and like, he would actually fuck. Get mad and yell, all right, enough with it. I'll do the character later. All right, shut the hell up. Shut the fuck... You know, it just interrupt
him. I just laugh when I hear Goat Boy. I think that's funny.
Well, the funny thing is I work with this MC at a show in Ohio. He goes, hey, but he's doing his act. He's very new, mediocre. And then he goes, I was at the zoo the other day, and they had goats, and I was just wondering if a guy had sex with a goat, would they have like a goat person? And then he starts going, you know, hey, anybody, blah, blah. And I go, dude, you're doing Goat Boy. Yeah. And I swear to God, the guy goes, yeah, Jim Brewer found out and actually told me not to do it. And I go, then why are you doing it? Exactly. He goes, because I was at a zoo. It's true. I go, you can't do his bit.
Yeah. Like, just because you're at a zoo?
Yeah. new comics don't understand. If you have the actual guy tell you, like, look, you know, don't do that. Actually call you up and say, hey, don't do that. You know, that's my bit. It's known, you know, audience members are telling you don't do it. You might want to not do it.
Carlos Mencia, when he actually, George Lopez was home watching his special, and he happened to be with his manager, and they were watching the Carlos Mencia special, his first one that he did, and the first 16 minutes were all George Lopez stuff. 16 minutes of his act was all George Lopez, and Lopez flipped out.
And I think he went to the factory and threatened
I think it was the store.
Or something. Yeah, something.
It was the store, and he, in front of everybody, he grabbed, first of all,
he grabbed him, yeah.
Yeah, he grabbed him by the throat. George Lopez is no cream puff. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he grabbed this guy by the throat and put him right up against the wall and said, if you ever, ever steal another joke from me, I will kill you. I will kill you.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, Lopez is capable of that.
Yeah.
He actually grew up hard. Not our friend.
Yeah.
He did not, you know. Well, maybe he had a little this time, maybe, I don't know. He didn't go to a private school. I don't know, but fact of the matter is, Lopez, he's a hard case. He meant what he said, and he would do the time for it. He fought, scraped for everything he ever had,
uh-huh.
and he deserves to keep his stuff, man.
Yeah.
He deserves it.
Some people just...
That's it takes, though, is what I'm saying. You can't hint around and say, hey, that's my joke, don't do it.
Mm.
You have to... I don't know. I'm old school that way. I will. I'll grab a motherfucker.
Oh, there's a famous... Jimmy knows in Boston...
Did I say motherfucker? I'm sorry.
Let it out.
You can curse.
Oh, man.
Balls.
I know. I just got incensed with that. I've seen so many people that work so hard to write their stuff, and then somebody comes along and snags it. Have you ever had that happen, Jimmy?
About? Is that what you're talking about?
About Boston.
Boston?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So a friend of mine is, I don't know if he's famous now. He's very well known. He's a national headliner. So him and his buddy... They were sharing their material. They were young comics.
Right.
And they were sharing their... One guy was Russian, the other guy was a Jewish kid. And they were sharing their material. They would do colleges, and one guy would do sometimes his bit, sometimes the other, da-da-da. And then the kid opens for me in, like, Rhode Island. And I think I called Tim. I go, this fucking guy, I mean, he murdered, but... Holy shit, I've seen every joke he's ever did. I mean, he killed in front of me. It was at the college. And Tim's like, oh, it's fucked up. So I tell my manager, and he's like, yeah. I go, look, don't fucking book this guy again. He's a thief. And da-da-da.
So he was doing your jokes, is that what
you're
saying?
No, he wasn't doing my jokes. He was doing...
other people's.
He was living in Boston, and he was stealing from all the best Boston guys
and
doing their act. Just like, you know, an hour away in Rhode Island, right? And so then all of a sudden there's just like, I don't know if it was that on Usenet that we saw it?
I don't know, but I remember.
And they said, look, I guess all the Boston Godfathers out there, they fucking cornered him in the fucking club, the Comedy Connection. They fucking slapped him around.
Good.
He was fucking crying. I mean, it was like, They go, you get the fuck out of here. You don't ever fucking come back. Yeah. You are banned from Boston for the rest of your life. He comes out here. Right?
He didn't try it out here too, did he?
Yeah, he comes out here. He's stealing. Now my friend Eddie Brill books him on Letterman. Right? And he's... And he, right? And the fucking guys in Boston, they kind of call Eddie, because Eddie really honed his craft a lot in Boston, and they threatened Eddie. Said, you put this guy on fucking Letterman? Because he was booked. Like, he was supposed to shoot Letterman the next day. They go, you know, I don't know if they said it will kill you, but they pretty much threatened Eddie, and they canceled him on Letterman. And the thing is, all the material he was doing on Letterman was original.
His own material?
Oh, yeah, it was his own material.
His own material.
But they just...
Look what happens when you steal.
They hated that motherfucker, and that was it. Holy
cow.
It was all about him being Russian. It was brilliant. Anyways, he's actually a pretty big comic now.
Okay.
He actually became original.
Oh, that's good.
But he stole when he first started. I mean, he was like 19 or 20 when he opened for me.
Yeah.
But
that's what, yeah, because you'll have guys, I've had guys take my material and tell me.
Right.
Like, they're brand new.
Yeah.
They don't get it. I said, do you?
Well, the last time I did that, I never took anybody's material, but there was a bit that I wanted to use that I thought was brilliant, and I thought I could do it really well. And I called the comic, and I asked him, I said, I'm doing a show here, and I'm doing a show here. And I was wondering if I could take that one bit from you. And he's like, you want to do my... And he went, you know what? No one's ever asked me before. Mm-hmm. He said, the last guys I saw, I've heard about it from somebody. I said, I'll even pay you to let me do them. He said, you know what? Just the fact you called, you don't need to pay me. He said, are you going on any other... I said, yeah, I'm going on a little run. He goes, go ahead. Use it. I just ask you to please use it sparingly. Mm-hmm. And it's brilliant. And it was from Rick Kunkler. I don't know if you guys know Rick Kunkler.
Well, you know what? It's actually hilarious.
What?
He was part of the three guys that were sharing material.
Oh, my goodness.
In the story. Is that insane?
Wow, that is weird. Yeah,
That's hilarious that you just said. And I love Rick Kunkler.
I love his bit. He does his bit called...
Did he leave?
He moved to Seattle like 4 years
ago. So he's from Seattle. So he moved...
Okay, he moved back to Seattle.
Yeah, so he comes out here... And he's doing really well. And he had the last comic standing back in the day. You know, like all the stuff. And he's doing really well.
He was on a show, too, with, what's his name? The guy that used to be on Everybody Knows Your Name.
He did Becker. He did one episode of Becker. I remember.
No, he was a reoccurring role in Becker.
I remember. He played a druggie. He did one episode.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Because I remember. So we were buddies. And I always thought he was so great, but he was he
drank so
yeah he drank yeah. a lot you know
I and, can't
he had great with representation
and women.
It was funny because he hit me up or didn't hit me up, he commented or liked something the other day, and I was like, dude, where, how, what the fuck? He's like, yeah, I'm not here anymore, you know. So whatever, he moved on. But anyways, there are these guys that are, they have the talent, they have the delivery, and they've taken, I'm not saying Rick Kunkler, but he was buddies with those guys. I'm not saying Rick, but he was buddies with these two other guys that were sharing the material.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and Dwayne Perkins, who's one of my really good friends, Dwayne was, when he first started doing colleges, he's a black comic, if you don't know Dwayne. Yeah.
Okay.
And he calls me up, he says, hey, man, I'm booked for like 10 colleges. He's like, let's just split the money and we'll split the
open
hour.
Open, close?
Yeah, we'll just split the hour. That's and we'll the way split to do the it. Money. So he's getting like $2,500, splitting money. So I couldn't do him some of the colleges, and I gave Tim a couple of them. So, you know, that was not the same thing, but that was us working together as comics. Like, hey, well, I'll do some of the time, you do some of the time, and we'll split the money. Because it's not that Dwayne might have not been able to do the hour, whatever it was.
Nothing.
He just might have felt like, well, I feel more comfortable doing 25 each.
You when was I
mean?
This?
Oh, man. The late 90s.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can't, well, I don't know. I mean, unless you're a superstar, you can't do colleges anymore unless you're kind of a young
comic. No, we don't. This mental case over here, I tell him stop trying to do colleges. He just went through the whole NACA thing again. Yeah. I don't do them no more.
Right.
I fucking refuse.
Mm-hmm.
I have,
Well, the money's changed,
these
too.
Agents see
back
me
in the 90s, the money was huge.
These yeah. agents see me. An agent saw me the other day, and she's like, I want to book you for college. I was like, no interest. She's like, what? She's like, with your credits, I can get you $3,000-$4,000. I go, nah, I don't want to do them.
Why don't you want to do them?
Because they're babies. They're fucking the political correctness. So if I talk about my black brother-in-law,
right.
You know, if I talk about the Italian, oh,
is that wrong saying that you have a black brother-in-law?
If I tell a story about them, you know, like in my life, they have issues with me, with it. I'm sorry.
I don't even see that.
Yeah, I don't like doing the college.
I just
no
don't
yeah.
see that. If you have to set it up like that to say what you're going to say, you're saying that that's
like I do
politically
joke.
Incorrect.
So I do a joke. I say I have a black brother-in-law. I remember the first time I saw his penis, and then I grab the mic and I go, look, something like this, and I grab it. They, you know, comedy clubs go crazy, right? And I go, yeah, so, you know, when you first see him, I remember, you know, he took out his microphone. I took out my microphone. It was like an episode of Sesame Street. It was like one of these things, not like the other. So I had like a black girl going, you know, it's very racist. That joke. It's like,
oh,
are you fucking kidding me?
She just wanted it. Well, the actual
yeah.
description
she
is.
She came up to me after the show. Oh, like, yeah. You know, fuck this. So that happened a couple different times. Talk about Italians, or talk about my Latin wife, and
me too. I'm married to a Latin wife
right,
too.
Right.
She's from Juarez, Chihuahua.
She's from Juarez.
Juarez, yeah, Mexico.
Oh wow.
Or Mexico, as she would say. But Mexico, yeah, yeah, yeah. She's and I ruined it. She had a beautiful name, Beatriz Arcelia Olvera Rios, oh, and then I had to put Stotzer on the back of that, which just destroyed it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But no, we seem to have very similar backgrounds
yeah.
in some of this stuff. But you don't do college, because like now you said, I have a black brother-in-law, is what you said. It's sometimes as simple as saying, I have a brother-in-law who happens to be black.
Right.
It's the brother-in-law part that counts. It's not a black brother-in-law.
Right.
It's a brother-in-law who happens to be black. That's more politically correct.
Right. But I don't give a shit.
I know that. And that's it shouldn't really matter.
Right.
You know, but it does.
But it does.
Yeah.
And it's scary.
I had that where Jimmy knows where I was, my father's Iranian. So I talked
right.
about when I
was a black
kid,
Iranian.
Yeah, when I was a kid they would call me names and I said sand nigger.
Yeah.
And I said they call me sand nigger and
Dunkun.
Ooh, you can't say the N-word.
Right.
That's well you had every black guy said it and they go, well, that's different. I go, no, it's not different. I'm saying, I'm not
right.
calling someone. I'm saying they go, no, look, you say it again. You know, like they couldn't accept me saying. You
about
know,
your own family?
Yeah.
You can't even say your
yeah.
own experience?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they got an issue.
Yeah, it's like they
wow.
get sensitive over certain
yeah.
club owners.
Well,
and,
my whole childhood thing, we'll have to save that for another time, but that was a disaster that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I didn't even know what I was till I was like 40. 41, maybe 42.
Are we in a coma?
No. I was adopted away.
Oh, so you didn't find
I'm
out.
I'm Sicilian and Greek.
Well, you knew you were something. You knew you were an
on
ethnicity.
The adoption papers, I was Italian, Irish, Polish, and German.
So you had to go
do I look Irish or
thing?
Polish or
this
German?
Ancestry thing, right? Is that how you found out?
No, I found out by finding the source. I found my mother. In a town of 200 people in Kentucky.
Oh, working wow. in the diner.
Yeah, and she's wearing like $30,000 worth of gold and,
oh, wow.
you know.
So she's Greek?
She's the Sicilian one.
Sicilian
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's a story, dude. It's a story.
It's a good story.
But, you know, it's...
Have you kept in touch with her?
Yeah.
Since? Oh, okay.
Ever since.
Was
yeah,
that must have been a weird, a tough kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, it may be for another time, you know.
Yeah.
Learning disabilities, I mean... We're all comics aren't always really well put together.
Yeah.
There's a lot of self hatred and doubt and all kinds of stuff I had. You know, you're giving up, you know,
mm-hmm.
right out of the box. You don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I've since found out it was a good reason. I'm glad she did it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was ethnically, no one knew what I was. I had really curly hair. I was treated like a black child in an area that was white.
Mm-hmm.
Which was very difficult, and I didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. So I know what it's like to live on that side of the tracks, so to speak.
Yeah.
I was dyslexic, ADD, and They didn't know what that was then. That was just called stupidity, you know? And I heard my mom when I was like in third grade talking to my dad. I was just in another room and I heard her saying, you know, which in her perfect Chicago accent, you know what, Sam? I think he's retarded. I think we need to send him to retarded school. And it's because I didn't know how to read well, right, you know? Yeah. I stuttered horribly. Horribly. And I think that had a lot to do with... That's the only thing that comes back. That's why I don't act. I think I'd be a really good actor. And anything that's been built around me, I do really well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hand me a cold, you know, a script,
mm-hmm.
cold read, I go right back to third grade.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I turn into Mel Tillis. You know, it's terrible. It's awful. And I break out, I just get beat red, and I throw the script down, thank you very much, and I leave. Because I know I'm not going to get it. But if somebody says, I want you to do this, you don't have to read a script, this is what we're going to do. I do really well in those mm-hmm. kind of situations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like Mork and Mindy, which was kind of scripted and mm-hmm. kind of not, because you couldn't hold Robin back, you know. If he knew what he was talking about and he had an area to get started in, of course, he could cold read, he could do anything. But that's the kind of thing that I would have done much, much better with. But mm-hmm. anyway, so...
That was like Henry Winkler was like that, right? Dyslexic. He couldn't read the script.
Tom Cruise.
They would read...
I don't look like Tom Cruise.
Red Fox.
Was dyslexic?
No, he just couldn't read.
Oh, okay.
But he was Red Fox.
So, my buddy is Lance Henriksen, the famous actor. He droid is, droid does. He's got that famous voice. He was in Terminator. He's been in a couple hundred movies. Anyways, he was not dyslexic. He was...
ADD?
No, you can't read or write. Illiterate, right?
Oh.
So he's at the... He goes,
you're searching for that?
Yeah, so he's in Manhattan, and he goes to the actor's studio. Right. And he goes, and he watches, and he's watching. And that's how he learned how to read and write. From watching the actors.
Watching someone else read taught him how to read?
From watching and look. I think they gave him the script or whatever the hell it was, and he would watch, you know, like they would do it, and he would follow along with it. So he learned how to read and write. And wow. He's became one of the top actors of our time. If you know who he is, you know exactly who he is. I'll show you a picture. But anyways, you have a great look. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know. You never did.
What do you mean?
Anything like with the acting? You didn't focus. I think you should have
done
been commercials and all that.
I've
shit.
Done it, but I haven't, you know, really gone. Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, I know who he is.
Literate.
Yeah. What is that? The same guy that was on like
everything.
What's the space movie thing? Never mind.
I don't know.
Anyway, there's just too many cold. I would take an acting job if someone just said, it's not going to happen. You'd be perfect for this part. Let's go do it. You mm-hmm. know?
Mm-hmm. That's like me. I have trouble. Jimmy was teasing me, but like I have trouble remembering my lines. But if he goes, okay, you can just
I'm having trouble remembering my set. How do you like that?
I'm
blanks.
You got
time.
You got me. I heard you on one of your shows talking about Brock notes out, this, that, and the other. And I'm like, the last time I did a really big show, I took a big Sharpie, a big fat one, the kind you rest on your shoulder,
uh-huh.
and I put bullet marks, like just names of bits, one uh-huh. word, two words. Uh-huh. And before anybody was there, I went out and I put them on the floor behind, it was, the they were, yeah, there was yeah. like uh-huh. 19 of these things, and they're on, audience members couldn't see them, nobody could read them. And they were there just so I could move and look and, you know,
mm-hmm.
mentally
yeah.
check them off. It's, which means I need to do a lot more road work. I need to get back, and I'm trying to pick and choose, you know. You get into a rhythm whereby you could come in and out of your act, somebody will say something and boom, you know, it hits. You're like, oh, I can pull this out and bang, 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 and, you know, and destroy with it. But that comes from repetition and redundancy, and it's very hard to get that here in Southern California.
Well, Joan Rivers was...
Who?
Joan Rivers was putting as big as this table. If you look at her comedy special,
it's oh, I did see that.
Points. Yes, she has them all on the stage.
But so they're all on 3x5 cards, and they're written small, right?
No.
Okay, I
she
thought
has
that's
huge,
what it was.
pieces of huge, and they're like, so she's standing there, so you can see the special on the cameras, and you're looking. Oh. They're all her fucking, you know. She talked.
Is this where she's in New York and she's in her own house and she's yeah. Doing, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
It was amazing.
I don't seem to remember that.
It was amazing to see it, and I was like, wow, look at that, look at that.
So what'd she do with them though?
Just to kind of gives her a frame of reference, like, oh, let me talk about, you know, right. My vagina, you know, whatever the hell it is, you know, yeah. Whatever she talks about.
Jimmy knows that. Just, I'll be doing the same bit that I did 15 years,
yeah.
And then it'd be like, you didn't even do the punchline. You just forgot, and I go, yeah, yeah. I don't remember.
You've
been doing the same bit 15 yeah. years, you don't even remember the punchline.
You know, every once in a while, you know, something will trigger me, and I'll go into a bit, and then I might forget, you know, it's like, you know, because it's not my normal set. And it's like,
right.
I have the worst. I did my closer at the time. I did it. This was one of those shows. I did it early, and then I'm doing 45. I do it again at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Big crowd. I'm killing. All of a sudden, I'm like, why am I bombing? And I did. This is a 4-minute chunk. I'm at the end of the 4-minute chunk, right before the big punchline, and someone goes, did it already?
Oh.
I go, you waited 4 minutes to tell me? Yeah. Like, that was my closer. That's, I was like, so I blanked. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I hope the bookers are listening.
Yeah. Timmy gets the he gets the wind it up sign. And yeah. Why is it that guys speak louder rather than faster when you get the wind up? And then, you know, you've got to speak faster. Okay.
Yeah. All right, so is there anything you want to plug? I've had a great interview.
Just
I really like
listen to A Comics Life Radio every Monday and Friday. You can go right straight to it. We're out of LA Talk Radio, but we have our own website. You go to LA, or you go to A Comics Life Radio, and we also are on Instagram at A Comics Life Radio. And
okay. Any Twitters for Sandy?
Billy does the Twitter thing. Billy Batts, I think he was a guest on your show at one point. And he would have all that info.
Okay, cool.
I just own the show.
So what about, is there, you know, I guess I think you would be a great actor. Is there a man crush actor that you're like, man, I really like that guy? You know, De Niro, these type of people.
Man, there's so many. You know, it's kind of a cross between, they're two really different people. Pacino, who I met and loved the guy,
mm-hmm.
and but his acting's changed over the years. Now he just mm-hmm. shouts a lot. The Lonesome Dove guy, Robert Duvall, I think is a phenomenal actor. Phenomenal actor.
Sure.
Those are my two. Those are my two man crushes. I'd like to meet
anyone from Godfather.
Oh my God, that's right. But you know what? Yeah. It's weird because I really was separating their work. And you're right.
Yeah.
That's funny. Anyone from The Godfather? Yeah. I'm crazy about both those guys.
So do you like to watch everything Pacino's done?
Yeah.
So I like this new movie I just watched.
I haven't
Pacino.
Seen it yet.
There's Danny Collins, which mm-hmm. is good. It's about a retired singer, or not retired. He's like a dick singer. Bobby Cannavale, who I think is one of the best actors right now, he plays his son. Then there's another movie, a very low budget independent that he did that's on like Netflix or something. It's called Manglehorn.
Hmm.
It's really, I like it. I like it a lot. So
that's the new one?
Yeah, check him out. You know, you really get to see, he's got some phenomenal monologues in it. You know, the other actors, I think, when they're acting, because he's opposite, oh my God, I can't believe I can't think of her name. Who's the woman from Raising Arizona, the wife?
Oh.
Holly Hunter, right? Yeah. So
another
that's
phenomenal.
His love. That's his love interest in the thing. And, you know, he's this old, decrepit guy. And he works at the bank, and she kind of's falling for him. But he's got issues. And he just loves his cat.
He loves his cat. Before I leave, I have to give you something that you don't know. You know a lot about a lot of things, but it's a Pacino story, and it's short. I got invited to his 63rd birthday, and all he wanted to do was play hardball. Seriously, he loves baseball, and he would chuck everything if he could have played second base for the New York Yankees. Uh-huh. That's what he always wanted. He said, you can take you can take all the awards, the Oscar, everything, if I could have done that. So in his spare time, he likes to play hardball. Not softball, hardball. The team he put together is Italians and Puerto Ricans, and every one of them could be a cover guy on something, and they're all great players.
Wow.
He hit the ball, and he's in all black. He's got black sweats on and all this, and he's running. He's trying to beat it out, and he hit the hole between third and short, and it rolled out into the kind of the shallow outfield, and he's running to get down. He's 63, right? He's at a park. There's nobody knows who he is at this park. And he's running and running and running, and he's looking at the outfielder, and the outfielder rears back and throws the ball to try to throw him out at first. And so Pacino dives. He dives for first base. And it was this cloud of dirt all came up, and he was out. The funny thing was, he was 12 feet from from the base, because he doesn't run fast enough to get any speed up to slide. Right. He just went chip, 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 like that. He just sat with his arm extended. He's nowhere near the base. Nobody's talking. No, and all of a sudden he rolls over and goes, and everybody burst out laughing. Everybody was afraid to do it. But that is something you won't get.
That's
hysterical.
So you watched it.
That's hilarious.
That's great. So you were on the Puerto Ricans or the Italians?
My sons played. One played on one team, one played on the other team.
That's awesome. So two things before I go. I've had a great time with Sandy.
You too. All you guys. You guys are great.
What would your favorite, if you were a porn star, what would your name be?
The Blood Gorged Cudgel.
The Blood Gorged Cudgel.
I don't know where that came from.
Cudgel.
Yeah.
What is a cudgel?
A cudgel is, it's a blunt, large blunt instrument, some form of bat.
Okay. This is something from your Chicago life?
No. It's just, it was, I like the word, so I looked it up.
Swollen dick.
Yeah.
The large swollen dick.
Right.
Yes.
The blood gorged cudgel. Oh man, that's gonna haunt my dreams.
Oh, you're just jealous.
So the last thing, what would your favorite swear word be?
Yeah, it's a throw up between cunt and fuck, because I say it all the time. I say fuck a lot, and I do it a lot in just a conversation. I shouldn't do it, but I do it. But I got no problem looking a guy right in the eye and saying, "You're fucking cunt." So I use them both.
Right.
You're fucking cunt. I got no problem saying it.
Have you ever called your wife one?
Yes.
You call it puta?
No. I'm better off getting the C word. And by the way, that's only happened 3 times in 41 years.
Wow.
And she didn't really say anything. She didn't come after me with a knife or anything. So I must have been really, really mad. Which takes a lot from
it. She has that temper. Does she have that Latin temper? She's Mexican?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, actually, she's Mexican Indian. She's Yaqui Indian from Mexico.
Wow.
They don't even send people in anymore to collect taxes from them because they don't come back.
Wow.
Yaqui Indians are badass, man. Nobody knows who they are. It's because they don't want you to.
Yeah. Wow.
But she's really mellow. She's really, really mellow. You're married. Women get back at you with the cold shoulder or the don't talk to me.
Not
or the
fucking Mella.
Oh no, yours is after you.
She's crazy.
Is she Mexican or
she's
what?
She's Costa Rican.
Costa Rica. Yeah, I've been there by the way. They're great women there.
Yeah, she's great. She's very loyal. She's mine. You know, but like I say, you know, we don't have any kids, and mm-hmm. she's Latina. It's rare. I mean, I found a Latina unicorn.
Yeah, me too, in a way. You know, my wife loves working. She's just she owns these big businesses and stuff, and she's just really, you know, she's very focused on education.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
I'm the exact opposite. I'm a moron.
Cool. That's. I think this is about it. Is there anything else you clowns want to ask him?
Yeah, that Pacino story was awesome.
Great story.
True story.
Yeah. I wish you could actually end on that as opposed to the swear word. Flip it over.
I wish you would just roll over him and like, hoo-ah!
That would have been great. That would have been great.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's funny. Always that hoo-ah. I always just thought he was saying whore. Hoo-ah! You hoo-ah!
That's from Brooklyn.
Yeah. Hoo-ah! Anyways, this has been the Brooklyn Buddha Podcast. Tim Holmey, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Woody.
Goodbye.
Fucking Sandy Stotzer.
Hoo-ah.
Pleasure, my friend.
Thank my pleasure.
You, Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.